What is up, everyone? I'm Ryan from Fireside Yankees, joined by my co-host Chris and Jacob. And unlike our other podcasts where I'll like joke about, oh, so much is being talked about and it's absolutely nothing, we actually have some level of action in terms of the rumor mill. And it's not like, oh, the Yankees might be interested in Pete Alonso, which we all knew was never happening. Or the Yankees are like into Edwin Diaz, another thing where you would also assume that's not happening. These feel like legit rumors, and we're going to talk about all of them and more right here on Fireside Yankees. Like, subscribe, turn on that notification bell, and comment your thoughts on what's going on in Yankee land right now. They're interested in Edward Cabrera. Those talks are ongoing. Cody Bellinger has received multiple offers from the Yankees, and they're also having talks with the Brewers on Freddie Peralta. I'll touch on that later because I want to get Jacob's thoughts specifically on that. But before we get into everything, Chris, let's start with you. How you doing, man? Happy New Year. How you feeling?
I'm feeling fantastic. I'm really happy to be here. My my workload kind of fell off a little bit this week because Ohio State lost to Jacob's Miami team. So it's like the good and the bad. Like, I got to deal with Jacob now a little bit extra. But the good is that, like, I feel refreshed, you know, like I'm in Cancun.
Jacob, why don't you – I'll give you your moment on Miami here, because clearly
– You earned it. You were on the field, yeah, right? I think you played the game.
Jacob was actually – he led the team in tackles, if I'm not mistaken. Am I reading
Did you wear that because I was on the show, or you just had that on accident?
I mean, I figured it would come up.
I think that's his way of saying it's intentional.
Mm-hmm.
It maybe was intentional. Yeah, dude, it was New Year's Eve. I was over at my buddy's place. We had a little shindig, had a few Modelos, was feeling nice. Then that pick six happened. Oh my goodness, I was on cloud nine the rest of the night. Fantastic day. Fantastic day for football. Fantastic day for college athletics. Fantastic day for the country, some might even say. And now Miami's still got two more games to go before they win it all. But we're getting close to baseball season now. It's a new year.
Yeah, we are. I think it is like less than a month away from pitchers, or no, about a month away from pitchers and catchers reporting. I think that's the timeline there. Now, I will say to like kind of close the chapter on the college football talk real quick. From my understanding, I believe that we're going to see Miami beat Indiana, right, Jacob? That's what you're telling us here. Like, Miami will destroy Indiana.
Well, I jumped to the portal, and Cignetti recruited me as a fan, so I'm rooting for Indiana the rest of the way. I'm a portal jumper.
I mean, I think it's going to be Indiana versus Miami at this point, but I do think Indiana is the best team if I'm going to take my fan cap off. But with the fan cap on, once it gets up to that, like right before the game, I'm going to put all of my money on Miami money line. And it's going to hit again, because that's what happened each of the last two games. So,
do we think they are a team that gets there and just they get blown out? Like, the game's over before it starts? Like, how do you think that game goes if they get to the national championship and play Indiana? I'll get both your opinions on this.
I think the defense is just too good to get completely smacked like that. But I could see a world where we just don't move the ball against them because their defense is, like, just as good as ours, if not better. So there's a chance they win, like, there's a chance it's a pretty close, low-scoring game, and they're up going into half. Then the second half, they just open it up, which is what they've done against a lot of teams this year. So it could be a bit of a blowout. It's going to depend on if Beck and the offense can keep the ball moving early and score some points early on.
Can I give, like, you guys just a quick, like, deep whatever? The Heatherman, who's the DC at Miami, coached for Cignetti and was the DC at JMU.
So now that we know that Miami's going to win the national championship, we can kind of start talking about what's going on in the baseball world. And we'll start with the Japanese market because the last two players left, that being Tatsuya Imai and Kazuma Okamoto, have found their homes. I believe each of them were a day before the signing deadline for those players. Tatsuya Imai we'll start with because I think this was a guy who, you know, at the start of his signing window, we were like, all right, the Yankees are going to at least pursue this guy. That didn't end up being the case. And I think our other prediction was that this guy was going to get a nine-figure contract. Also did not get a nine-figure contract. He signs a three-year, $54 million deal with escalators that will bring it up to $61 million. I believe it's 80, 90, and 100 innings pitched for those escalators. So if he's just a regular starting pitcher, he'll likely get there. He's got opt-outs after every single year. The Astros still have to pay the posting fee for that first year, so they'll be on the hook for that regardless of whether Imai opts out or not. But I kind of want to get your guys' thoughts on whether the Yankees should have given him that deal or not. Chris, we'll start with you. Should the Yankees have given him that contract?
So last week when we talked about this, we even like discussed like that with the declining market, I set the over under at $90 million and all of us had him over 80. I think me and Ryan both had him at 90 or above. And we all agreed that like, look, like, is he worth the 120 that he was originally projected? Is he worth the 140 originally projected? I mean, I'd be okay with passing on that. But we all agreed, like, be opportunistic here. And so, like, when we got the text, when Ryan texted our group chat, like, hey, like, he signed Astros. And it's like, oh, well, what's the number? Is it – well, actually, I worried initially when I heard that it was Astros in the number because they generally do a pretty good job. But for it to be $60 million, like, yes, they absolutely should have signed him for that, especially given what the pitching market is right now. Like, that felt egregiously low to me and something that the Yankees should have been all over.
Yeah, I kind of like, I have such mixed opinions on this because I've had my concerns with Amai kind of going into this. I know a lot of the pitching gurus that everyone follows on Twitter were very high on him early in the process. I try to keep level-headed about this because, like, I don't know, people were giving him like Joe Ryan fastball comps and I was like, I don't really see that with him. I think this shows that teams were concerned about him, whether it's the stuff translating, whether it's availability, whether it's something off the field. If the fact that he got this contract, I said last week, I said, if he signs for under nine figures and it's not us, I'll be upset. And I kind of am. Like, I think it kind of would suck to go out and trade for someone who's going to be on the team for 2 or 3 years and give up all those assets, the prospect assets, when you could have gotten some guy who has a pretty decent ceiling for under $20 million a year. So I understand that point. I am a little bit frustrated that we weren't even in on that. But the fact that it was so low, so much lower than people expected, it really does show me that there's something up here. Most of the good teams weren't really in on it. The Mets weren't in on him. We weren't in on him. And the Houston, I feel like Houston just waited for him to fall into their lap at that rate. And they were like, all right, that's worth the risk. And for us, we didn't see it that way. So I think as much as it's easy to jump down Cashman's throat and jump down the Yankees' throat for not making any moves, if they didn't like him for some reason, then don't go get him just to go get him. You have to trust the process at this point. You have to trust that they'll go out and add another starter somewhere else.
Yeah, and I want to kind of work off these points with, I want to clarify, I would have given him that contract. Based on what I know about the player, I would have given him that contract. But if you're going to get on Cashman about it, you have to get on, what, 20 other GMs in the league? There are, I mean, you mentioned the Mets. Does David Stearns get a pass for not signing him? Do the Red Sox, the Blue Jays, all these teams that, look, you can tell me that these teams have added a bunch of starters, but, you know, you want to talk about being opportunistic. I mean, Amai was, on paper, based on what we know, a very affordable contract for all these teams. So I look back on this free agency and I go, clearly the market looked at Tatsuya Amai and rejected him. The public looked at Tatsuya Amai, and I'm among these people, and did not reject him. I will sit here and say that I don't like to just kind of go with whatever the industry feels. You know, if the industry feels a certain type of way, I'm not going to go, oh, so clearly I'm wrong. I could end up being wrong, and we'll see. I'll stick to my guns here a little bit, not to the point where I think he's worth $160 million, but I'll stick to my guns to the point that I would have given him this contract. We'll see if I'm right or wrong. If I'm wrong, I'm not going to lose my job. If a GM is wrong about this, they do lose their job. That's part of this that people don't really talk about, you know?
Yeah,
if you're a fan, you don't lose anything.
I also think, like, I agree with your point that based on what I know, I would have given him that contract. But these teams know more than we do. They sat down and spoke with this guy. They have insider information about this guy. They have information about his medicals. You see in the contract, there's escalators for, what is it, 80, 90, 100, 110 innings? That's a little bit concerning to me. They don't think, like, if they have to give incentive for him to reach 80 innings as a starting pitcher, that tells me that they think, for some reason, he might not reach 80 innings this next year. So, I don't know. Even the more concerning thing would be, if they think he might end up as a reliever, then that's a total bust of a contract. But that just shows me that there's more to this than what we know from the outside looking in. So I think I am a little bit upset. I would have liked to give him this contract based on what I know, but it shows that we don't know everything.
I mean, it screams red flag, right? Like this has to be like there's a handful of red flags out there because for the initial, I mean, even the people that didn't like him that much still would have run to give him this deal.
Yeah,
so that's where I'm at. It's like basically there's some sort of red flag there, but like naturally, like it's like dang, like see, my job's not at risk. I just want the player, you know. Like
again, it's the conversation of where did he end up and what did he sign for? He did not end up on the Dodgers. He did not end up on the Mets. He did not end up on the Rays. He didn't end up on the Brewers. He didn't end up on the Guardians. He ended up on a, like, I know the Astros, we kind of have, as Yankee fans, viewed them as this Goliath and this, like, monolith of greatness because they have won so much. But that was, that era, that front office, those people who built that infrastructure are gone. Jeff Luhnow is gone. James Click is gone. The managers from that era are gone. Brett Strom, the pitching coach from that era, is gone. They don't have that consistent pipeline of minor league to major league talent that they had for years. Like, they lost Gerrit Cole and replaced him with Framber Valdez within, you know, 1 year.
My biggest thing with them is I think they're still a good front office in general. They're just kind of like in a they're in a rock and a hard place situation financially over these last few years. And they've also I think Jim Crane's got a bit of an ego on him. I think that's led to some problems in the org. But in terms of what they've had, they've run out of talent from the pipeline. They haven't been able to develop as many players. They've been trading away like the last remnants of their farm. What I see from this contract is they are desperate for starting pitching. Right now, Lance McCullers is slated in as their starting pitcher number 4. And Lance McCullers has thrown maybe 10 starts in the last 10 years. Like, I don't, this guy never pitches. And he's supposed to be one of their main starters this year. So the fact that they, even if they have concerns about Amai, that was too much of a value deal to take that risk based on what they needed in their rotation. Our rotation is iffy right now. But with all the guys we're going to have coming back in May, June, I don't think we needed to take that risk if we see it as that much of a possible failure. I don't think we need to take the risk as much as they did.
And I'll also say this to give my final thoughts, and I'll let you guys give your final thoughts as well on this Amai stuff. I'm not going to be stunned if he's good. Like, I believed in the player, and that's why I I'm going to stick to my guns that I believe in the player. But I also, it's this conflict between, I believe in the player, but I'm also, I can't ignore the fact that the industry rejected this player, essentially. The industry rejected him. How many stars, and I see these arguments about, like, well, the Yankees gave Stroman $18 million, why wouldn't you give him my $18 million? The idea that because you gave out a contract that was bad when it was over, like, by the time it was over, you look at it and go, this was a terrible contract. Because you did that, that should not mean that you give out another bad contract. And this logic, again, could be applied to any team in baseball. The Mets gave Frankie Montas $34 million over 2 years. What is that, $17 million a year? Why didn't they sign Amai? Want to look at the Red Sox? They gave Walker Buehler 1 year, $20 million. Why didn't they sign Amai? You could do that with, again, every team in Major League Baseball. Tanner Scott got $20 million a year from the Dodgers. Why didn't they sign Amai? Xander Bogaerts got $300 million from the Padres. Why didn't they sign Amai? Like, we could do this over and over and over again. You could go to every team in baseball, look at their last 3 years of transactions and go, they handed out a bad contract or they made a bad trade, and so why didn't they give Amai money? This is not, like, I think a lot of the reasons you'll see very frequently used to argue to slam the Yankees are ones that are not being used universally across the board, and I think are also rooted in logical fallacies. Like, that's my issue is not with people who think Amai is good, because I'm in that camp. It is with people making disingenuous arguments to make it seem like the Yankees specifically just cheaped out, and it's not every other team in baseball also doing the same thing.
Yeah, I agree. I think the using the Stroman contract is kind of cheap, because we signed him at, what, age 32, and he immediately lost 2 ticks off his fastballs, and he immediately lost 10 percentage points off his ground ball rate. Like, he just instantly regressed. If you got the guy that pitched in 2023 in 2024, that would have been a pretty good deal. But the fact that he regressed so much in age 33, which, like, it's possible, but that you don't expect him to fall off that much velo-wise in his early to mid-30s, like, I, it wasn't a good deal. I didn't love it at the time, but I feel like it ended up being a lot worse than the process of the deal actually is. Like,
yeah, the process blame was good. The result was worse.
The process was okay, and the result was that it was horrible. So, doing a retroactive evaluation of that type of deal, of course, you're going to run into some of those sometimes. So, I don't know. I think it's pretty cheap to use the worst possible outcome for a deal as a reason why we should go and sign everyone. You know what I mean?
I also think the people don't understand the contract structure of this deal. This deal essentially reads as, if he is good, he leaves, and you pay $18 million, potentially probably $21 million, because he'll hit the escalators. You'll pay $21 million plus the posting fee, and then he leaves. So I think it's going to come out to over $25 million in what you pay for this season. And if he does not leave, if you get him for more than 1 year, it means that the contract is underwater immediately.
Something went wrong if he's not a free agent next year.
The structure of the Stroman contract was not the same.
It's very similar to the Michael King deal that he just signed with the San Diego.
Mm-hmm. But I would argue it's a little bit different because with Amai, like King was 1 year removed from being what, like a top 20 starter in baseball.
Yeah.
Like Amai is never, like, we don't know if Amai is going to be a top 20 starter. There are, again, the industry rejected him. The industry did not, I don't think, rejected Michael King. Clearly, he got 3 years, $75 million. It's not a rejection of the player. It's 1 year short of where I think a lot of people thought he was going to get. I think it was like 4 years, 80, or 5 years, 100, somewhere in that range.
This contract's a very similar structure to the King deal, but it's a lot riskier, in my opinion.
Right. Again, and, you know, with you the King deal, we talked about this.
Yes, because you don't know. Like with King,
yeah, I guess the upside is what Michael King's upside is.
Mm-hmm. And remember, it's not like a different team signed King, so no one gave up draft picks. And if you look at the immediate cost for 2026, I think the Padres are actually paying less for this 1 year, even if you adjust for the luxury tax, just based on how much you have to shell out with the posting fee. Again, I'm not rooting against Amai. I am not like a hater of Amai. I like him, but you have to recognize.
This is another thing. If Amai has a good year this year and hits the market next year,
you can sign him.
Sign me up.
Yeah,
sign me up next year. If he can prove himself in that ballpark, especially, then sign me up.
Yeah. Again, it's a matter of like you're talking about a player whose contract structure literally reads: if I'm good, I'm gone. If I'm good, I'm hitting free agency, and if I'm bad, you are stuck with me on an underwater contract.
If I'm bad, I'm rich.
Right. It's a risky deal. I don't think people are. You know, I think these player options, people don't understand that those have value in to players, that we can't quantify it monetarily, but they do contribute value to a deal. Like if you gave, I don't know, Aaron Judge if Aaron Judge got an 8-year $360 million offer from a different team, but had player options after every single year, he's taking that in a heartbeat over the deal we gave him. Like there's no amount of Yankee love he would have considered to not take a deal where he can opt out whenever he wants. So, yeah. The other deal that happened that's a little more consequential for us directly is Kazuma Okamoto going to the Blue Jays. I think we can all agree that Okamoto was not happening. The final weeks, I mean, once they signed Amedo Rosario, there was just no, I don't think there was a chance we're going to sign him. But the Blue Jays still look to be positioned to add potentially another big bat, whether that's bringing back Bichette or adding Kyle Tucker. So how worried are you guys about Toronto right now? Jacob, we'll start with you.
I'm scared. I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty damn scared of this team. And listen, I understand, like, last year they had pretty much everything go right for them. They had a lot of their veteran guys bounce back. They had a lot of starting pitcher health. So in terms of luck and, like, the percentile of outcome, it was a very lucky season overall for, like, I'm not saying they didn't deserve to be where they were. They did, of course. But in terms of things going right versus things going wrong, they had most of the things go right. So I don't think that's going to happen again. But at this point, compared to this point last year, they're a much better team. They're a much deeper team. And I think they have the fire to keep getting better, which is very, like, if I was a Toronto fan, I'd be stoked to see this. I'd see these guys were an inning away from the World Series, and they're not phoning it in. They're not saying, oh, this team's good enough. They're saying, we have to go out and get better. We're going to sign Okamoto. We're going to sign Dylan Cease. We're going to sign maybe Tucker. Like they're still in on Tucker, and they're not. I think they're at about the same amount of money as us, luxury tax wise, and they still have more flexibility. They're willing to spend. It looks like there's a chance they end up with a higher payroll than we do. So, based on how they operate, based on the front office looks pretty good. The coaching staff looks brilliant. David Popkins looks like a great hitting coach. This team scares me, man. They could keep getting better from where they are right now. And if the season started tomorrow, I think they'd win the division. So, yeah, I am scared.
I echo that. It is. I mean, it's got to be refreshing. Like Jacob said, Blue Jays fans got to feel good because, like, I mean, this team didn't sit on their hands at all. They were hyper-aggressive. And if things don't work out for them, if they take a step backwards, it's not because of lack of spending. It's not because of lack of an attempt. And I think naturally, like, that's what is making, I think, Yankees fans a little bit more restless, because we just saw the Blue Jays be where the Yankees were the year before, you know, in a World Series, lose the World Series to the Dodgers, and then have not rested. They've gone. I'm scared too. So I'm right there. Not frustrated, but scared.
I would say that in most situations, I don't think a team should be reactionary to like their rival's immediate move, because you can do a lot of stupid things when you are reactionary. Being reactionary really rarely works out for teams, especially in free agency, where agents, like, the word reactionary is like an agent's wet dream. The idea of a team being desperate. Like, the Orioles, like, Scott Boras probably saw the ball. Like, the idea of the Baltimore Orioles being like, we need to spend money, Scott Boras' world lit up. Like, his life got better the second that came out. But I think the way the Blue Jays are acting, not say you got to be reactionary, but it should, I think it should motivate you a little more. Like, you've got to have a really active winner. And look, I think people are overstating the bar needed to have a good winner, a winter. You look at what the Blue Jays have right now: Kazuma Okamoto, Dylan Cease, Cody Ponce, Tyler Rogers, currently on the free agent board for them, or guys who are hitting the market for them. Chris Bassitt, Bo Bichette, Seranthi Domínguez are the three players I would care about. The other players, kind of non, they don't register to me at all. Like, I wouldn't care about losing Ty France or IKF or Max Scherzer. I know he made playoff starts for him, but, you know, I wouldn't consider that a loss or anything of note. And they, to their credit, replaced Bassitt and with Ponce and Cease, and Scherzer with Ponce and Cease. So, you know, bring it all back to the point of when you kind of net the losses with the gains, I think the Blue Jays have gotten better, but I don't think it's to the point where the Yankees can't get to that point, but they've got to make some things happen. It's bringing back Bellinger. It's bringing in a starting pitcher. It's bringing in impact relief help. It's maybe adding another bench bat. The Yankees need to have a response to this in the sense that they need to build a – they need to know the bar for winning the American League is higher than it's been the last 2 years. It's not, wow, the AL sucks. Like, I think there are three other teams in the American League that you can argue are as good as the Yankees, and that is the Mariners, Blue Jays, and Red Sox. And I don't think that was, going into spring training when they had Gerrit Cole, like, this team's the best team in the AL. Going into spring training the year prior, I believed it was them in Baltimore. This time around, it's like, I think there are three teams now, and yeah, I mean, wouldn't be stunned if two of them are better on paper.
Baltimore's no pushover right now.
Right, yeah.
And then my White Sox are going to break out this year, too, so we're going to have to look out for them. I'm serious. This team's talented. I'm gonna play my flag right now. First episode of 2026, the White Sox are going to surprise people this year.
I think my pick for, like, a surprise AL – like, I don't know if this is considered a surprise AL team. I think the Tigers are, like, kind of under discussed. I think they're still good. Like, I don't think they lost anybody that I care about. They brought back Labor. They brought back Finnegan. Is there anybody they lost that I need to care about?
I think the whole conversation's been around, like, who are they trading Scooble to? And then that's like, they were never trading Scooble. It's just that's just how the media takes things. So I don't know. I think they're like a 1B type playoff team. Like, if they were in a better division, I think I'd be like, oh, they're going to be a wild card team. But the fact that they're in the Central, it's like, if they don't win the Central, that's probably a problem. Like,
right, but if you play them in a 5-game series, it's not like, oh, we're beating them. It's more because
you're getting two from Scooble.
Right, so my point in all this is the fact that there are four teams that I would say, yeah, you play them in the division series, I'm not, like, going into – my barometer is – Cleveland and Kansas City, that path. That path was – the Royals only scared me because it was a 5-game series. That was it. There's nothing about the Royals actually scared me outside of the fact that it's baseball and a 5-game series. Cleveland, once we beat the Royals, we were going to the World Series. The second we beat the Royals, we were going to the World Series.
We're never getting an easier path in the Aaron Judge era than we had in 2024, unfortunately.
I agree. But I would also say – well, I don't think we're going to be facing a team as dominant as, like, those Astro teams, which were just ridiculous.
That's fair.
But at the same time, like, the Yankees are not as good as – like, the current Yankees right now, as things stand on January 5th, they can't compare to, like, the 2019 Yankees. The 2019 Yankees were so much better than them after – well, injuries, you would have thought they weren't going to be, but
the sock,
they
man.
Were. Yeah, 2018, I'd say, clearly better than this squad. 2017, I thought – I think a lot of people overlook 2017. That team was, like, supposed to win 100 games in terms of, like, expected win-loss record and won 92, I think.
Yeah, Girardi cost us, like, 8.
Yeah, that I mean, there's a reason he was fired. But, like, point is, this Yankee team, if I were to project out their win total, I'm pretty sure they're projected for, like, 86 wins on Fangraphs. This is one of the weaker Yankee teams right now of, like, the Judge era. Granted, again, they haven't brought back Bellinger. I assume they're going to add a starter, like, things of that nature. I'm just saying, like, you've got to make these improvements because as of right now, yeah, you're not good enough. You're not – I don't – they don't have enough starting pitching for me to even think of them as a team that's a World Series contender right now. I don't know if that's crazy, but that's
like
where
I said,
I'm at.
If the season started tomorrow, Toronto wins the East. But thankfully, the season doesn't start tomorrow, and we still have 2 or 3
that's
more months to make some moves.
But yeah, that's kind of where I don't know. I'm scared of the Blue Jays. They're good. They're really good. And as you mentioned, doesn't look like they're going to stop spending, and they are going to have a payroll most likely this year that's higher than any payroll the Yankees have ever had, depending on what the Yankees end up doing this year. So that's part of this as well. It's not just a short-term fear. It's the fact that they are willing to do things that Hal has never been willing to do. And that's part of, like, you look, it was one thing when Steve Cohen walked in and you became the second richest team in your city. It was another thing when the Dodgers got bought out by Guggenheim and you were no longer the richest team in baseball. Now you're no longer the richest team in your division. Like, are we serious? You're the Yankees. Like, what are we talking about? What's going on? This is the last 5 or 6 years of the Yankees payroll standing. It's a little concerning. It's a little concerning to me. That's just me. That's just me.
The other part of it is, like, it's the Blue Jays, and they probably feel like they're, what, 2 more runs away from winning a World Series. And so that's the other part of it. It's like they were a lot closer, and they didn't have, like, the big looming, you know, loss like the Yankees had the year before. And so, like, when you feel that close to winning a World Series, I think it makes it a little bit easier to convince yourself to spend to get over the top.
And I will say, you know, I know the Yankees lost Soto, and that obviously sucks. That sucked. That was awful. But we can't sit here and pretend they didn't, like, respond to not winning the World Series.
No, they respond. They responded really well. They respond. Well, here's the thing. It's like the Yankees' response had to be to get back to replicate the Soto year. The Blue Jays' response is to get that 1 or 2 extra runs to go win a World Series. So it's slightly different, right? Because, like, for the Yankees, like, your thing is you just don't want to fall off a cliff when you lose, you know, the generational Juan Soto. And for the Blue Jays, it's like, no, we're keeping our stars in-house. We just need maybe 1 or 2 more pieces to pan out. And we're World Series champions.
And I also, but I will say this. I think the Yankees need to, like they're, depending on what, we'll talk about this in the next few minutes, but, you know, depending on what this market ends up looking like, you know, if Bellinger signs for less than you thought he was going to sign at the start of the winter, if you can pull off a trade for a starter and it's not going to kill your farm system, like, go make that extra move. If you have more than you thought you're going to have in the chamber trade-wise, free agent-wise, don't pocket it. Go make the extra move. You may never be as good as you are going to be this year ever in the under Aaron Judge's contract. You may never be this good again, ever. Last year might have been the last time you being a really good American League team, because we never know when Judge is going to fall off the cliff. We never know when Cole's going to fall off the cliff. We never know when Fried's going to fall off the cliff or, God forbid, have a season-ending surgery. Same with a lot of these guys. So there has to be a level of urgency in that respect as well.
And I mean, I think in the last week or so, since last episode, we've heard a lot more in terms of the hot stove than we had in probably the 2 months prior to that.
What'd they say? The alarm clock's gone off?
Yeah.
And I think that's what's encouraging here as we start talking about Cody Bellinger, with the Yankees having multiple offers submitted, since the last episode, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's at least reported. I mean, I'm sure that the offer that was made, the first offer, happened before. I'm sure it happened on Monday or whenever, you know, we last recorded. But we did not know of it until after the fact. And then Joel Sherman, I believe it was yesterday, added that a second offer had been made since that first offer. Do we feel like this is close? Do we feel like the Yankees, or at least Bellinger, is close to signing, whether it's with the Yankees or somebody else? Like, how do you interpret these reports? Chris, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think so. I think we're pretty close to the Cody Bellinger thing kind of ending. I mean, I think it feels like it's clear that he wants to be in New York, and it's really just more of a Yankees versus Scott Boras instead of a Yankees versus Cody Bellinger. And when you get that feel, you got to think that he's going to end up being a Yankee. So I think that alarm clock going off is also like Bellinger being like, all right, let's get this thing going. The Yankees have kind of held the line firm. They're not going to go overboard, which I think is a win for Cashman, if that is the case. So I do feel like this is coming to an end, because, again, it always felt like a Yankees versus Boras, not Yankees versus Bellinger, and I think that's a very important distinction to make.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. I feel like, do we have a contract number on the most recent offer? Do we have any estimation here?
We have no reported numbers, which is the weird part.
All right, so I think if it was like, I'm assuming we're probably around 5 years, right? I don't think we want to go above 5. The early reports were that we were at 5 and they were at 7. Maybe we'll eventually meet them at 6, but I think the idea right now is that Belly does want to come back, and we don't want to handcuff ourselves long term with that. So 5 years is a happy medium between what we want and what they want. hopefully we don't have to give the sixth year. But it seems like if I had to give a number score, I'm like 90% that Belly is going to be back in pinstripes next year, this year.
I feel good about him coming back. I feel like it's going to happen. I think, as you guys mentioned, they're waiting this market out. I think it's the right play as well. I have never felt like the Yankees should just force this signing to happen. Now, if they wanted to give him an ultimatum and say, hey, you got to sign or we're going to start moving on and doing other things and we won't care if it compromises your return, that's different. But I've never wanted them to go, hey, let me give you an amount of money that you're absolutely going to take. That, to me, is, unless it's, you know, Bellinger saying, hey, I'll do it for $5,140, then yeah, you give him that number, I think. I think it'd be crazy to walk away at that number at this point in the winter. But if he's like, if there's like a number of like 6 years, 180, he's like, that's what it's going to take to get it done right now. It's like, I wouldn't offer that. I'd move on first. I don't believe that the Yankees are handling this beautifully. I don't think Brian Cashman's going to get enough credit for how he's handled this if Bellinger does come back, because there is enough fan pressure, there's enough media pressure, there's enough optical pressure in all of this to have assumed that some GMs would have just crumbled. And we've seen, again, this is not an old-time baseball thing. Do you think the Orioles gave Pete Alonso 5 years, 155 solely because that's what they evaluated the player at, or because they were like, dude, we've got to do something. Like, we have to spend money. That's why I think they did it. I don't think I think there are still teams that spend money for the, hey, we've got to prove ourselves a little bit financially. I don't think the Yankees have anything to prove with Cody Bellinger. I don't think they have anything to prove financially by signing Bellinger. Do you guys, like, are you guys going to start changing the tune on Hal because he signed Cody Bellinger back? I wouldn't feel any differently about him, even if he loses him.
This is the expected path. Like, I would love to go for Tucker, but it was pretty apparent early on that we want Belly back. And I think if we can sign Bellinger for less than what Alonso got, it's a good contract. And there's no way you could be upset with it. This is like a 3-4 win player. He fits the ballpark perfectly, and he plays good defense. So it's like, you take that.
And I also think, again, there is this fine line between, I don't want to overpay the player, but also, yeah, this guy's good. Like, this is a good player. This is a really good defensive left fielder. Again, probably going to put up a 115 to 120 OPS plus next year. Probably going to be projected to be closer to 120 than 115. That plus elite defense in left field, it's funny. I think a lot of people are, like, uncomfortable, just kind of realize. Like, a lot of people want Stephen Kwan, for example. Cody Bellinger puts up like a 115, 120 OPS plus and is a full-time left fielder. You're essentially getting a more power-oriented version of Stephen Kwan. You're getting a better version of Stephen Kwan. That's what I would look at it as. Yeah, so
Bellinger barely strikes out. I don't know why everyone's so obsessed with the everyone's so obsessed with that archetype that Bellinger is. And then when it's Cody Bellinger, because he's been on the team for a year, everyone thinks, oh, they're just settling. They're settling for the same lineup as last year. It's like, well, the same lineup as last year was pretty damn good, so you'll take that.
I'll also say, I think there is a lot of, like, shiny new toy syndrome with some of these free agents. Like, I know this isn't on the outline, but, like, they checked in on Bo Bichette. I'm sorry, I don't want Bo Bichette as a standalone signing more than I want Cody Bellinger as a standalone signing. Like,
I think the Bichette stuff would make sense if it was, like, if we were willing to open up the payroll a lot and do, like, a short-term, like, pillow-type deal for him so he could prove that he's healthy for another season, I would love that. But I just don't see that as happening.
And, like, what is it? Like, the report that they don't view him as a shortstop?
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
You're going to put him at third base? He's never played?
And also, that means you have to trade McMahon.
Yeah, that's the part of it.
The teams who need a third baseman are pretty cheap. Like, the team that makes the most sense to trade for a third baseman would probably be, like, what, the Pirates? But you think the Pirates are going, hey, let's play $16 million for Ryan McMahon? I don't think so. I don't think so. Yeah, I mean,
they
don't.
They traded away Hayes, who was making about the same.
I think he was making less per year, right? He was making less per year, no?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I don't remember.
Point is, I don't think they're trading for a defensive first third baseman.
Yeah, unless we're paying a lot of the money, which is like that kind of defeats the purpose of trying to increase the value at the position.
And again, as a standalone signing, and this is another part of this conversation too, and I want to get your guys' opinion on this. I think we can all agree, obviously, Jazz Chisholm's better than Jason Dominguez. Like, you would very clearly, like, just the fact that Jazz is that much better than Jason means that upgrading left field is infinitely more valuable than upgrading second base in terms of a standalone signing.
If you sign Bo, I don't even know if that's an upgrade over Jazz at this point.
Jazz is the elite
second baseman on defense. Like, as everyone, it's very popular right now because Jazz, I don't know, Jazz is like loud on Twitter, so people are sick of him already. And it's like, oh, he had two bad postseasons and he tweets, so now everyone wants Bo Bichette over him. It's like, well, Jazz is making a lot less money to produce at the same level, if not even better. And he fits the park perfectly. So it's like, I don't know why we're all of a sudden looking to move on from this guy. This guy's an all-star level player. Like, I have no, there's no reason we should even be thinking about Jazz Chisholm right now besides extension talks, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would, look, if the Yankees could trade Jazz for like a really good starter and then sign Bichette and sign Bellinger, okay, I can buy that. Like, I can buy that as an offseason plan. But who's, like, no one's been able to really show me, like, a clean trade you could make for Jazz.
Nobody's taking on Jazz as a rental and offering us a really good win-now starting pitcher with multiple years of control. It's, that trade just doesn't exist anywhere. So we have to let this thing die.
I would agree. Again, with Bo, like, I like Bo Bichette as a second baseman in, like, in a vacuum, but Bellinger fits this roster way more. You are way worse in left field than you are at second base. And in regard to third base, I would obviously say that third base versus left field, you can go back and forth with me there on that. But I would say I feel better about the third base room right now than the left field room right now, because I don't have a platoon in left field. So Jason would have to face lefties. He probably ends up putting up a similar OPS plus to what he did this past year if he's got to face lefties more frequently. Even if you're optimistic and say, oh, he'll push to like a 110 OPS plus, I don't know, like, does he put up more war than a McMahon-Rosario platoon at third? I don't know. Like,
I just had a crazy thought. What about Bichette at second, Jazz to center, and then Grisham to left, or something like that, or put Jazz back in the outfield?
I don't think I want to watch that team play defense.
Jazz is a good center fielder.
You want to watch that up the middle?
I mean, I don't think Bo would be that bad at second base. Yeah, he might.
I think the combination of Bichette Volpe would drive Yankees Twitter off a cliff.
I think Bo Bichette
healthy Volpe
is
would be good. Healthy
shortstop.
Volpe would be good at shortstop. So
I like you.
Yeah, I think Bo Bichette is a Gleyber Torres level shortstop in terms of he was bad defensively because he's not a good athlete.
Yeah, so it'll probably be a Gleyber Torres level second baseman, which is still
exactly
bad.
Now, Hot Stove is on right now, which is going to be really funny because I'm going to be hearing it while you guys are talking, and I'll give you guys any nuggets I hear. But the next thing I want to talk about is Edward Cabrera, because those talks are crazy right now. Crazy right now. Chris, we'll start with you, man. Edward Cabrera, are you for or against trading for him?
I'm very for, and I guess part of the thing I do is, like, bias, because if I watch a guy carve up our team, it's like, oh, yeah, like, that's who I want. Now, I know the fastball didn't metrically look the best, but it's above 96. The off-speed stuff is all really good. You know, it's a career high in innings. He's the same age as Amai. Like, I like it if you don't have to give up too much. I've heard that, it would be Dylan Lewis and Ben Hess would be part of the deal, and I don't know who the headliner would be. But I like it if you can get it done. So yeah, I'm in. I would love it, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. I'm all for this. Like, I actually saw him pitch live in Miami back. I think he was a rookie or like his first or second year, and he struck out like 9 or 10. And I was like, this guy's stuff is ridiculous. Like, and he's got 3 years of control left. And based on the rumor packages, I think it was a Dylan Lewis and Ben Hess. I like Ben Hess a lot, but like I would do that all day. Unless his arm is pulled pork, I would do that all day. He's got a deep repertoire. He's got 5 pitches he throws over 10% of the time. He's the type of pitcher that that Blake loves to work with. Changeup, sinker. He has a 4-seamer. Maybe Blake will adjust the slider into a cutter. Who knows? That's the type of thing he likes to do. He's also got a big-time curveball that's still pretty hard. So I don't know. I like the player a lot. He got his command under control this year, which was the big issue with him, was that he was walking way too many. And if the command improvements are real, this guy's going to be a really good starter next year. And I don't know what more to say. That would be a great move.
I also believe in presence. I don't know if you guys believe in pitcher presence, but like 6'5", 220, like it just feels imposing. And for some reason, when you see the guys that are that big, you know, throw a curveball that hard, it just makes our stuff look even more disgusting. That's not number space. That's just a pitcher's vibe checks for me. I don't want to stay too long on it.
I will say with Edward Cabrera, the price does indicate there's probably – look, I'm sure teams are concerned about the health, right? Is that fair to say? I'm sure teams are concerned about the health.
Yeah, first time over 100 innings, I believe.
Right. But, man, I just don't believe that the Yankees can pass up on that price if they believe he can at least pitch in 26. If he tears his UCL in 27, fine. That's okay with me. He tears his UCL in 2027. I don't care, man. I don't. I'm sorry. I don't. If he pitched in 26, do it. Do it. Because you need starting pitching so badly. I've emphasized so hardly, so hard. I've always throughout this offseason said people are underrating the offense and are overestimating this pitching staff. They don't have enough starting pitchers to get through 162. That has been my take. When they get to spring training, they touch down, they get to Tampa, and we look at this rotation, we're looking at a number six starter being Elmer Rodriguez. I do not feel comfortable with that. I don't. A guy who's got two AAA starts if you combine the regular and postseason. I love him. He's a prospect I love, man. And if the Yankees keep him in a Cabrera trade, that's part of my motivation here. If they can make that trade without trading Elmer, that's a huge plus for me. Because yeah. I do think Elmer's going to make a start for you, more than one start for you this year. But it shouldn't be to start the season. Once one guy goes down, and one guy will go down in March, I hate to tell you guys, you're going to find somebody's shoulder or elbow is not in a good spot. And maybe it ends up being actually Edward Cabrera. But you want depth. You don't want it to be Elmer's the first guy up.
My philosophy with pitcher injuries is they're going to happen. They're a lot harder to predict than people realize. Everyone said for the longest time after DeGrom hurt his arm in 2021 with the Mets, they said this guy's arm is no good. He came back after his surgery this year, and he maybe missed a start or two. He pitched the whole season. So it's like, as long as you have the depth, some guys are going to go down, and as long as you have guys to fill in those rotation spots, you're going to be fine. So if you can get this guy at below what his talent indicates he could be in terms of trade value, then you have to do it all day. And I'm looking at him, he's got positive stuff plus, positive location plus this past year. He's never had an elite home run to fly ball ratio. He's never had an elite left on base rate. He's never had an elite BABIP. The ERA doesn't indicate what he could be if he were to have a lucky season. So the stuff so far, I don't know. The way I look at him is he's probably like a 3.5 ERA type guy, true talent right now. But if things go his way for a year, he's going to be right around 3. And if he's healthy, 160 innings, that's a really good pitcher. That's probably a 3 or 4 win player. So I think we have to swing this if possible.
Yeah. Again, I think Edward Cabrera is a home run if you can get him, depending on the price tag, but we'll see. We'll see. Now, I do want to say, and I want to start with Jacob on this, they're also linked to Freddy Peralta. Jacob, why is that not happening in your opinion?
Freddy Peralta has been he's like Giannis. He's in trade rumors every trade deadline, every offseason, and it never happens. The Brewers are good. They had the most wins last year. They had the most wins last year, and they're going to trade their ace that's making $8 million for prospects. Let me tell you right now, the Brewers have a lot of prospects. They have one of the best farms in baseball. They have some of the most young talent in baseball. What are they trading their ace for? It would have to be the biggest, most ridiculous overpay, which wouldn't make any sense for us to do, because we probably can't even afford that if they're going to be bidding, if they're going to be taking bids from all around the league. There's no chance this happens. You could quote me on this. There is no chance Freddy Peralta is a Yankee in 2026. Write it down, bookmark it. Because when it doesn't happen, you'll come back to me and say, oh, he was right. Freddy Peralta's not a Yankee.
I think, again, I don't think Freddy Peralta is happening. Jack Curry, by the way, I just want to note, he just said the Yankees are very interested. This is a player they've been very interested in the past in regard to Edward Cabrera, and that they've had conversations about Freddy Peralta and Mackenzie Gore. So I think that legitimizes that the starting pitching market's going to move, I think, for the trade side.
Yeah.
If they were to pull down a starter, and Chris, I want to go with you on this, who do you think it'll be, Gore, Peralta, or Cabrera?
I think Cabrera. The price tag makes the most sense. The relationship makes the most sense. I agree with Jacob. I don't think that Peralta's getting moved. And I think if it was going to be Gore, I feel like the Gore thing got kind of warm and then it's kind of gone cold, so I don't think it'll be Gore, just based on kind of the way the market feels like it's trending is kind of my guess.
And I will say, I think they need to get a starter.
Yeah, we all agree the Yankees have to add a starter.
But I also think they're going to add one. I think they're going to add one.
100%. I think it's either going to be, the way things are looking, it's either going to be Cabrera or Gore. I feel like if Cabrera's arm isn't that bad, then they'll do it. And like you could say maybe it seems like an underpay, which seems a little suspicious based on the names that have been floated. But we don't know what the final offer is going to be. We don't know. Obviously, it hasn't been done yet, so that means that they're still talking about some things. So
right.
Who knows? Maybe it ends up being to the point where the Marlins have wanted Spencer Jones forever. Maybe we end up throwing in putting a package together around one of those, either Jones or Dominguez. Who knows if it goes that way, if we really like the player. And if we don't like Cabrera's medicals, or if we aren't willing to give up Jones and they really want him, then maybe we could be pivot to Gore. I just don't see Peralta making any sense. And who knows? Like people are also talking about Hess and Lewis. Like these are good prospects. And if the Marlins really like them, then maybe they just really like the prospects. And that's the ones that they want. And they think that they can develop well. So based on things that I don't want to be reactionary on this and say it's going to be Cabrera because of the recent reports, but it seems like it's a good possibility happening right now. So it's never going to be Peralta. It is more likely to be Cabrera, but I could still see Gore being the next man up if we don't end up going with Cabrera in the next few weeks.
I'm going to say they get Cabrera, and I'm going to say it's like I'm pretty confident it happens. Like, look, Jack Curry also knows that they're not close in a deal, but I don't know. I just, too much smoke, names being leaked, Yankees want a starter. Chris Kershaw mentioned that, like, they've indicated to teams and agents that they would like to add at least one starting pitcher. I think that's where we're at, right? A deal is not imminent. A deal is not happening today. A deal is not happening tomorrow for Cabrera, but I think they end up getting him. And the issue is that, and I've said this before, and this is what my concern was with not going in for agency, is that these teams don't have to trade these pitchers.
Yeah.
A lot of what Yankee fans miss out, and baseball fans in general, this is not a Yankee fan-specific thing. I'm not going to make it seem like, oh, the arrogant Yankee fan, that's all they think about. Contending teams and the fans of those teams fail to realize, when you've got a controllable starting pitcher, or a cheap one, you don't have to trade them. The Brewers do not have to trade Freddie Peralta. The Nationals do not have to trade Mackenzie Gore. The Marlins don't have to trade Edward Cabrera. If they go back and go, I don't want to do this. I don't like your price. I don't like the prospects I'm getting in this deal. They're just not going to do it. They're not going to go, oh, no, but man, we have to do it. There's no financial burden any of these guys come with. It's like the Marlins are like, dude, our payroll's screwed if we don't get this guy off the books. It's like, if he's here, he's here. Cool.
Yeah, I think the reason the Marlins makes more sense is because they do have a lot of starting pitchers. Like, they're going to have guys that will fill in but if they trade Cabrera. And this could be the case where they do have issues with his medicals, and they think that trading him now after his most healthy season to date is the best time to move him. And he's also got no options, so it's like he's a less flexible player relative to the rest of their young rotation. So I don't know if that's going to come into play. I don't think I've been staunchly against the idea that Sandy will get moved, because I think they need to appease the Players Association and pay someone, and Sandy's been there for his whole career and he's a really good player, so I don't think that was ever going to happen. But Cabrera could be, they could see him as a sell high, so I think that makes the most sense of the three. And the Brewers, like I said, they just don't have someone who's going to be able to step up into Peralta's role if they trade him, and they're a contending team, so that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and again, it's these teams don't have to do it. So I do think that's also, I'm going to heed warning to the Yankees in that too. Like, you put yourself in a position where you have signaled to all of baseball that you're probably not going to sign a starter, or at least if you're going to get a quality starter, probably not going to be through free agency. You don't want to pay that money. Your course of action is a trade market, and everyone's aware of that. If you think you're going to walk away and acquire a starter without giving up something that hurts, you're foolish. Foolish. So it's going to hurt. Whatever deal you pull down, if you pull one down, it'll hurt. And if they don't pull one down, I'm sorry, I don't think they're a contender. I don't. It's a hard line for me. I really don't. I don't play when it comes to starting pitching and starting pitching depth. You want to tell me, like, oh, well, you know, they've got seven guys who are, like, mediocre on paper, but, you know, they've got stuff, upside, whatever it may be. Like, you want to convince me, hey, Will Warren to be a number three starter next year? Fine. You want to convince me Luis Yelich some bounce back in the swing and miss stuff? Cool with me. Totally fine. You want to convince me that, like, Rodon and Cole come back and, you know, they pitch to where their projections are at, or a little bit better than their projections, which have them as, like, number two, number three starters? Again, fine. Fine with me. But if you want to convince me that they're going to have everybody healthy, nope. Can't convince me of that. Can't.
Yarbrough's
I don't care what organization.
Yarbrough's the opening day number five starter right now, and I just don't think you can go into the year with that.
Yeah, no. No. Doesn't work for me. Doesn't work for me. Right? Well, you know what? No, I'll push back. That would work for me if, like, the sixth starter was a Yarbrough type and the seventh starter was, like, a... Like, if Elmer had five starts or 10 starts of AAA experience, that works for me. Because at least I've got options. Because I know I've got guys coming back. Right? So that would work for me. The current setup doesn't work for me. Your number six starter should not, in a responsible world, have the pressure of you must be major league ready because you're almost certainly going to pitch. Your number six starter in spring training either gets hurt or pitches on your major league roster. Elmer, if he comes into camp, he lights it up and guys go down and he wins a spot over Yarbrough, phenomenal. Phenomenal, great, awesome. But you should hope that happens, not rely on it happening. You know what I mean? There's a difference. This is not poo-pooing on Elmer or wanting to block him from the rotation. If the Yankees, you know, you talked about this, Jacob, in the last podcast. If the Yankees signed Chris Bassett because they couldn't trade for a starter, I'm not going to be thrilled, but I'm not going to tell you, oh, they're not contenders. They signed Chris Bassett. I'll tell you, it's not what I wanted. It's not what I hoped for. It's less than what I expected. But yeah, they've got enough arms where they can get through 162. I expect them to have enough pitching to get to the postseason and win in the postseason potentially. But I think that's my concern. That is my concern. And that will be my concern until it's addressed. I don't think, again, I think it's such in stark contrast to where a lot of people are at, where it's, oh, they don't have enough offense. They can't win with this offense in the postseason. I vehemently disagree. And I didn't ask this question when I should have, and I kind of want to ask it now. I want to get both your thoughts on this. The Yankees, if they bring back Bellinger, would be running it back offensively. Jake, we'll start with you. Do you think, because they're running it back, that there is a problem with the offense at that point? And how would you feel about it?
I think it's really good offense. Maybe even the best in baseball. So I would be happy with it. I think that people are underrating this team's offense because they have a bad taste in their mouth from this past postseason. If you look at the numbers, the team overall wasn't terrible. It wasn't good on offense. But it was mostly Aaron Judge's production that made them go from terrible to adequate. If you take Judge out of the lineup, it's a little bit concerning right now. But if you bring back Belly, you expect some improvement from the third base spot, which I've been saying. We had one of the worst seasons possible from Oswald Peraza last year, over 250 plate appearances. We're not going to have the idea of removing the really bad at-bats and bringing them up to a little bit, like a mediocre to average range. That's good enough for me if we're running back this offense, because they graded out best in baseball in terms of a WRC plus last year. So it's like, I don't know what more people want. Like, obviously, Tucker would be really nice. I would love to go get Kyle Tucker. But if you bring back Bellinger, you have Grisham. It's a really good team. And you add the starting pitcher on top of that really good offense, then you're looking at a really damn good team that could win the AL East this year. And the way things look right now, it'll be Bellinger and a starting pitcher. And that looks pretty good.
I'd be okay with running back the offense, too. I kind of echo a lot of Jacob's points. But one that I'll add is that, like, last year, we not only got a zero from third base, but there was, like, a month and a half we got a zero from second base when Jazz went down. And we tried to do the whole LeMahieu thing. And then we actually played LeMahieu at second for a little bit while everybody screamed to put Jazz back at second. So I do think a full year of McMahon Rosario at third base, I think that is going to net you a huge positive with the bat, like a huge positive. And I'm high on McMahon this year. I love the power. Additionally, like, I think one of the things that left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouth was after the Volpe injury, his offense went off a cliff. Before the injury, like, he was a really adequate offensive player, and I hate to even, I feel like that's like a bad thing to even say. It's like, you know, you're coping for Cashman if you even mention the fact that Volpe was having a decent offensive season before things kind of fell off the rails. But no, I would be more than okay with running back this offense. I think that if you get Belly back, I think we all agree, we all wanted Tucker, but if it's Belly and you don't see Trent Grisham fall off an absolute cliff, there's no reason to like where this offense is heading into next season.
I also
look, the
think
Yankees, go ahead, please.
Going back to the Volpe thing, we have Volpe insurance now. Last year, we didn't have a second. We didn't have a backup shortstop last year.
That's
now
right.
Now we have Caballero.
We did have Volpe insurance.
So it's like it's the same. If we bring back Bellinger, it's essentially the same starting lineup that we were running last year in the postseason. But last year, day one on opening day, we had a lot less depth than we do right now. And that definitely comes into play over 162, and it comes into play in terms of platoon matchups and whatever. And who knows, if we have issues at the deadline, we're starting with the end of the season 2025 lineup. If we have issues at the deadline, if guys aren't performing, you can address them then. But if you have that lineup for 162 and they all produce at a similar level to what they did last year, it's going to be near the top of the baseball. So
I'm excited for Ben Rice to add on top of this. Just
Ben Rice without the worst luck known to man this year. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, he's going to step into that like Kyle Tucker type role that everyone's been wanting. Ben Rice, we already have that player on the team.
Yeah, I will say you know. I think when we talk about like the Robin to Aaron Judge, I think Ben Rice is capable. He was their Robin last year. They led baseball and runs scored. I, again, really caution the average baseball fan from looking at seven games and weighing that into your projections for next season or even in a postseason environment. The failures of the sins of the 2020 Yankees or the 2021 Yankees or the 2022 Yankees should not be held against the 2026 Yankees, because at the end of the day, there are two players who played in the 2022 Yankees who are going to be in the lineup in 2026. It's Judge and Stanton. That's it. There's going to be seven other guys who weren't there. You know, I know this is really their first time, like, running it back, truly. Like, having a group that has continuity since, what, 2018?
Yeah.
Right? Is that really the first time they've had a group? And even then, like, a little bit, they brought in Glaber, or they added Glaber, they added Andujar, they lost Headley, they lost Frazier, Bird kind of fell to the wayside for Voit. I'm sure another guy is going to be added to this mix offensive at the deadline, whether it's a bench piece or a starter. I mean, I'm not sure where, but these things just pop up. Point in all this is, again, to say this is the most continuity we've seen with the team year to year offensively for the Yankees in quite some time. So, you know, I'll kind of segue things into our final segment, and that's our mailbag question from our Patreon. And I want to shout out our Patreon again. Thank you guys so much for supporting the page and supporting Firestart Yankees. And this one from John Cena, and he asks, do you guys believe signing Bellinger, trading for Cabrera, and getting a pen arm or two, is it an A-grade offseason? He puts in parentheses, I can't give anything an A without Kyle Tucker, but I'm interested in what you guys think. Jacob, I'll let you kind of give your thoughts first. What grade would you give that kind of offseason?
I think it would depend on the relievers. If it's guys I really like, I'd probably say like A-. I think I agree with John Cena on this one, that going into it, I think an A or an A-plus offseason has to be Kyle Tucker. But this is a really good offseason. This team would probably be favorites in the AL East if we make all of those moves that he just said. So if I don't love the relievers, B-plus. If I love the relievers, A-. That would be my grades.
Chris, what would your grade be on that kind of offseason?
I'm right around there. I think I wouldn't give it an A or even an A-, maybe, because it felt like an easy offseason, I guess. Like, it was pretty okay. Like, this is what's right there in front of us. But pulling off the Cabrera trade, I think would be a plus. But probably like maybe B+, maybe a tick below Jacob.
I think it depends on the quality of reliever. If they get one pen arm, let's say it's from a guy from Miami in a Cabrera deal, which I do think, I will say, I've heard a lot of smoke that if the Yankees pull down a Cabrera deal, they're getting a reliever in that. And Calvin Foucher's a name in that mix.
Fauché.
Fauché. It's Fauché. My bad. My fault. My fault to Mr. Fauché. If they were to bring in another reliever on top of that, not saying it's necessary, but if it's like a guy who I really like upside-wise, I can push it to a B+, A- range, just because, for me at least, like, if you are able to put your offense in a situation where they're probably projected to finish first in runs scored or first in wins above replacement in the American League or in baseball, depending on what site you look at, and your pitching staff gets the boosts needed to be considered one of the best pitching staffs in baseball, that's one of the best teams in baseball. So, again, I wouldn't give it an A. I wouldn't give it an A as well. I agree with his assessment. It had to be Kyle Tucker or, for me, like, a really like spread the wealth kind of offseason, even in last offseason, they didn't cover all their holes. They didn't get a third baseman, which was a big oversight. Like, one of the, I will say it's one of like Hal or Cashman, whichever was the reason why, probably financial. So I'm going to point to Hal on that. That's like one of the biggest gaffes they've made in recent roster construction memory. If they have that kind of offseason, though, where they're acquiring, like, five impact players by the end of it, and I consider impact players like Trent Grisham, Cody Ballinger, I wouldn't consider, like, Amed Rosario in this group, even though he is going to matter to your roster, that's an A. but I don't think they're going to do that. So I'm going to go B plus. Is that fair? Sorry, that was a really long answer, but
no, I
want to make sure
I get what you're saying. I think the I look back at like even 2024, you have positions on the team that you go into the season that ended up not panning out, like Anthony Rizzo at first base, Verdugo in left field. And these are issues that I obviously you would like, you were hoping that you get production from those guys going into it. But I think we have, if we do bring back Bellinger on the position player side of things, there's not a single position that I would look at as a really weak position. Maybe shortstop with Volpe, but if Volpe's healthy, then he's probably a pretty good fielder and at least passable as a hitter. So we're going to have the depth and we're going to have a pretty good. We're probably going to get pretty good production at each of the nine spots in the diamond. So in terms of what we look at, looking at this lineup as a whole, it looks good. And then the rotation is the real issue, as Ryan's been saying, nonstop this offseason. If we go out and get a Cabrera, the depth is instantly a lot stronger. So I don't know what more you can do if you're Cashman besides go out and get a Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, again, I mean, look, the Yankees, I think this offseason that this guy outlined, this being Mr. Cena himself, is very much a, all right, Yankees checked all their boxes, which I think is automatic. Like, if you check all of your boxes, you can't say you had a bad winner. That's my thing. You check all your boxes, how did you have a bad winner? But you didn't, like, hit any home runs. You didn't do anything crazy. Now, you've replaced Cabrera with, like, Peralta, which I don't think is happening, but if you were to do that, yeah, I would consider giving it an A. Like, I think you add, what, a top 20-ish starter in baseball, I'd give it an A. I think that would push, or maybe not an A. Maybe. I mean, I don't know. That would be in contention for that, because Peralta is, to me, like a game changer, a like crazy needle mover. Not saying Cabrera sucks or anything. Cabrera's good. I like him. But Peralta's, you know, he could take the ball for you in game one. You know, Cabrera isn't that. So it's a little bit of a different feel. But again, I don't think this would be a bad winner. It just wouldn't be, it wouldn't win any awards, right? But still good. It's kind of like you're talking about like a good, it's kind of like talking about like a really good fast food place. It's not going to win a Michelin star. It's pretty good though. You get a quesadilla for Taco Bell.
It's not as exciting as like what Toronto's doing, for example.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And but, well, that is dependent on what they finish with. If they don't add another bat and we pull this offseason off, I feel better about our team than I'd feel about their team. Is that crazy to say?
No, I think I agree. And even if they go out and get a Tucker, or they bring back Bo, and we do all of that, it's still going to be very close in terms of the quality of each roster, because you're going to have to expect some type of regression from George Springer. And, like, I don't know, I don't think Ernie Clement's going to be a 3-WAR player again. Like, there's definitely spots on their team that aren't going to be as strong next year, and that's they're getting out ahead of it now, going and signing these guys because of that. But if we go out and do all these things, we're going to be fighting for the division no matter what, barring a disastrous regression or injury from big players this upcoming season.
Yeah, again, we'll see what this ends up looking like, but any final thoughts you guys have on the Yankees and this wave of rumors that kind of came out? And I'll wrap up with kind of telling you guys the notes I took from the Curry stuff. Nothing?
Nothing. I got my only final thought is go Canes on Thursday.
Totally fair. Totally fair. So quick rundown on what Jack Curry said. Some teams have fallen off in the Cody Bellinger talks. Don't think that's stunning. They're still in negotiations. Said about Edward Cabrera, a deal is not imminent, but this is a pitcher. This is a direct quote, this part. This is a pitcher that they've had, that they've been very interested in the past. That was an awkward sentence to type out because there are two ins in there, and I felt uncomfortable writing that. It felt immoral. They've had conversations regarding Peralta and Gore. They checked in on Bo Bichette, but a deal between the two is not likely. I think, you know, I don't think there's anything that's game-changing, right? Is there anything here that, like, breaks your mind? I think a lot of people are taking the Cabrera thing negatively, but, like, everything Curry said is pretty, like, run-of-the-mill standard for what has been reported. There was, I think, a lot more smoke on Sunday of, like, oh, this is going down soon. And I think a lot of Yankee people were like, oh, this is going down soon, at least behind the scenes. But nothing's imminent, and obviously they got to compete with other teams for that to happen. So
yeah, I also want to say, if you're Jack Curry, you can't be going out and saying this is about to happen when it's not. But if you're, with all due respect to like Eric Hubbs, he's allowed to go out on his Twitter and do that, and he's not going to. He's not held to the same standard as someone like Jack Curry.
He's going to lose his job.
Yeah, exactly. So I will like, also say, I think Hubbs has been pretty good with his scoops that he's had. So like, it's not that I don't believe him that this is going to happen soon, but like the level of urgency, I think Curry's probably more dialed in on that, and he's not going to go out on a limb and say the first thing that someone tells him is going to happen right now.
I'll also say in regard to Jack Curry, I'm gonna put my I don't have any credibility. I'm gonna put it on the line though. I think people are talking crazy about Jack Curry. It's like, oh, he's washed. It's like, well, because he's not telling you that they're going to sign him I, and that they didn't sign him I. He was 100% fucking correct. Why? Because he's telling you they're not in on Bichette. Oh, he's making me sad every time I watch. It's like, yeah, they're not in on, like, most free agents. It's really just Bellinger. What do you want him to tell you? That they're in on somebody that they're not in on? Like, I think the Jack Curry is washed stuff. Like, I'm going to be honest, man. This is Jack Curry's had an off season, I think, because a lot of I got smokescreen on the my. The Athletic got smokescreen. The New York Post, the New York Daily News. There was one guy who didn't get smokescreen. It was Jack Curry. Like this has been a you can hang that. That's a banner. If you're a reporter, you put that's a World Series. It's at least a pennant. That's at least a pennant. Am I wrong on that? I'd put that as a pennant. If I was the only guy saying the Yankees are not signing a my out of everybody else in the world, banner up. Beat the Japanese media market. Like just. Clean sweep them. Clean sweep. That's just me. That's just me, man.
Respect Jack Curry.
I agree. Look, that guy's the gospel Yankee stuff. If he told me that the Yankees were not going to sign Cody Bellinger, I would believe it. I'd believe it. I don't care what anybody else says. I'd believe it. But, yeah, we'll see what ends up going down. Seems like Bellinger. Like, that's the most optimistic thing he talked about. So, we'll see. But yeah, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Like, comment, subscribe. Tell us what you guys think in the comment section below. Join the Patreon. Link is in the description. Check out our social media page. Again, links are in the description. And I'd also like to note before we leave here, check out And That's Baseball, Baseball's YouTube channel, and check out Chris's YouTube channel because there's a lot of activity in the college football world. And on the baseball side, we're ramping up soon. So I know that these two are going to have a lot of content coming out in the next coming weeks. Are going to be fun. Or in Chris's case, there's content that already came out that's having a lot of fun. I don't think the word is fun, but you might have a lot of fun watching.
No, dude, I have a lot of fun making content. Yeah. It's always fun. Yeah, it's always fun.
That's fair. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll see you guys in the next one. Peace out, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Yeah, good point.
Perfect.